Welcome back to Leading with Grace, Grit, and Greatness. Don't miss a second of this show or any other Now Media television favorite. Welcome to Leading with Grace, Grit, and Greatness. I'm Vikita Poindexter, your host. What if the strongest kind of leadership is the kind that protects people without hardening the heart? This week on Leading with Grace, Grit, and Greatness, I'm sitting down with retired police chief Joe Pulino. Mr. Pulino was the San Bernardino's chief of police for the San Bernardino Unified School District. And what we're going to talk to you today about is what it takes to lead with safety and dignity, especially when people you are protecting are still growing up. We're talking about those young, impressionable lives. They unpack crisis, rebuilding community, trust, and we're going to talk about how schools can prevent harm without creating fear. And with Chief Pulino, he's going to share how cross-agency partnerships, including human trafficking prevention efforts, can change the outcome for the most vulnerable. If you lead people anywhere, any place, and at any time, this conversation will stretch you. Don't miss it. You'll be able to watch this again on Now Media. Chief Pulino, thank you for joining us.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me this morning.
Yeah. Absolutely. So you're the retired chief of police.
Yes.
And so I know you have some other things coming down the pipeline, but I do want to kind of talk about, you know, you led one of the largest school district police departments, and that's not easy. And so I just want to talk about safety and how it relates to protecting our children. So in school settings, what's the difference between law enforcement campus and safety leadership? And why does that distinction change the outcome?
Oh, yeah, I love your question.
Thank you.
Yeah, for one, you have where we deal with the most precious commodity, the land in an environment. Of course, and these young ones, they're compelled to be there by state law. So, of course, our role as a law enforcement entity in a K-12 setting, mm-hmm. Is to make sure that we support the educational process. So, of course, in the educational process, we want to have people that like being around our kids.
Right.
So, of course, it starts off with the humanity piece. I'm sure you've heard this quote by Desmond, where Desmond says, my humanity is bounded to yours, so we can only be humane together. Mm-hmm. So, of course, leadership starts there in terms of making sure we see everyone's humanity. And in so doing, we arrive at this place where we can deliver a service, that's second to none. So, of course, it starts off by making sure that our young ones, wherever, second San Bernardino is like 83 sites across 109 square miles, so 73 schools. So it's important that when the young ones land at the schools, that they know that we see them. And when one believe that you see them, then they know that you care about them. And then, of course, you do all the things that's needed to make sure that they get that thing that they come to the school for, which is an education. So, of course, the difference in terms of your question is that law enforcement that them support a K-12 setting, they are pretty much educators.
Okay.
And they're educators. And, of course, they're there to make sure that they're guardians as well. And, of course, it's a person that is my coach and mentor. His name is Dean Chris. And Dean says it's the difference between a warrior and a guardian. So, of course, we do our best to be guardians where these students know that they can speak to us, share with us, whatever their ills may be or their triumphs. And in so doing, we arrive at a place where we can lead them.
How do you instill those type of values into the police officers that are protecting the children?
Once again, it starts off with the front end of leadership. Maxwell said everything rises and falls in terms of leadership. So as the leaders go in terms of philosophy, so does the body, which is a police entity.
Right.
So, of course, it starts off by discipline and making sure that you have the right people on the bus.
Mm-hmm.
I have a philosophy. If you can't supervise yourself, then you can't work for me.
That's good.
Right. And of course, it's important that we be disciplined. So as my discipline go in terms of carrying myself when it comes to principles and values, so those around me, that's how I hold people around me accountable. And then the last thing is that uninformed people do uninformed things. So it's incumbent upon us to make sure that people around us are informed. And in so doing, they would translate informity, not disinformity, right?
So oftentimes in the community that we're seeing nowadays, there's a lack of trust within not just, you know, local law enforcement, but also within schools. What's the first move that you would do to try to rebuild credibility with individuals that may have lost confidence in our police officers on and off campus?
Well, I love this question because in coaching young police officers moving up the ranks, especially in the mid ranks, it's something I've learned after a little under 16 years as a police chief. I learned this. If you go into the community, it's incumbent upon you to look like them. And this is what I'm saying. We have to be okay shedding the costume. I rarely wore my uniform. And I wore my uniform so the community could see me as them. The authority doesn't leave me. However, the uniform is a symbol of the authority that's given to you by the state. So in shedding that, of course, the community start trusting you because you're in a room without the uniform on, you're able to have a conversation without the barrier to the conversation. Then, of course, trust begot trust. So if I trust the community, then at some point they'll start trusting me, which allows me to be able to influence the community.
Absolutely. So we're seeing a lot of violence in schools where and the majority of the violence that we're seeing is not actually outsiders, it's children. It's the young people that are attending schools. How do you help educate kids to be able to deal with this thing called life that they're trying to navigate through while they're at school so they can get the education that they needed to be successful in life?
Yeah, I think it starts off with an education where the parents are informed. And the more we inform the parents, and in parallel, inform our kids with the truth. Exactly the question you're asking, right? Where is this violence coming from? When we arrive at the truth, then we can address stuff. And however it's said to them, if you want to change the future, then you drive information as deep as you can with our youths. Because then they'll arrive with that new information, which brings a different behavior, right? So our kids need to know that and the behavior that we're experiencing isn't caused by nobody else, but those in our community. Yeah, this is a piece about the school setting. As the community goes, so does the school. The school is the same as a community. So if the community has a propensity for violence, then the school will also have that. So of course, if we deal with that reality, in terms of addressing the ills that sometimes is on the parameters of a school, and then we'll see a difference in terms of those behaviors. But your question is real powerful, and I'll share with you some stats that I left behind.
Yes, please do.
As a police chief, when I took over in 2010, we were citing kids at a rate that was like at 9% of the encounters.
Wow.
With kids, citations or arrests. I took over in 2010, we created a safe school task force. And as a result of this task force, we came up with new policy. Of course, certain things in the penal code we stopped citing for, like minor fights, daytime curfew, nighttime curfew, small amount of marijuana, et cetera, et cetera. And what that helped us do is reduce citations and arrests by 65%.
Wow.
So, of course, then you have to go out your way to be cited and arrested. So, of course, then I believe that we have to be mindful of the consequences and that arrests and citation brings upon our youths. Prime example, and we had a young man that got an internship to the White House. He was cited in middle school And that citation almost prevented him from doing his internship at the White House. Yeah, we're having some things that we can do to be able to remove it, right? Seal records, et cetera, et cetera. Which our policy calls for every year. Within the police department, we have to go through all the arrests and citations, and those that can be sealed, we request that they be sealed.
Okay. I just think that's amazing, because I know one of my questions was going to be that, you know, San Bernardino had this reputation, right? And so thank you for answering that. I think people really need to be able to understand that school is more just than just a place of education. I know that you as a leader, not only are you leading and mentoring the individuals that work for you, you're highly involved in the community. You're highly involved in, you know, helping, you know, young men, especially young Black men, you know, excel. I mean, you're part of one of the most elaborate giving fraternities that exist.
Well, thank you.
And so when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about, you know, what got you to this point, you know, some of your additional service that you've done, as well as what are you going to be doing next?
No, right on.
All right, so we'll be right back.
Thank you.
Chief Polino, we were just talking about how, you know, you helped reform the narrative for San Bernardino Unified School District. And I talked about how you're highly involved in, you know, mentorship, right? Really being able to not just mentor the police officers, but the young men and kids within the community. Tell me what moment in your career reshaped how you lead young people where the policy itself wasn't enough.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I think that aha moment came for me when I attended a summit at the Claremont Colleges.
Okay.
And it had to do with workforce development. Yeah. So, of course, I'm having a conversation with a gentleman by the name of Dale Marzen, Dr. Dale Marzen, who I worked under on the cabinet. And Dale invited me to this summit. However, it's all educators that are supposed to be at the summit. And, of course, in my conversation with Dale, I pushed back. I'm like, well, you know, we're law enforcement.
Right.
Yeah. And Dale said, well, yeah, I'm not really asking. I'll see you there that Monday.
Okay.
So, of course, I arrived there, and the conversation was all about how we can be creative about the future youths. And the rest was history. When I got back, I created a four-tier system for youth engagement, one of which was them to explore auxiliary program at the elementary school, and the junior explore program at the middle school, the traditional explore program at the high school, and a cadet program. So if you notice, this is a STEAR program,
right,
that have kids feed from the elementary school all the way to the cadet program. So this is what's interesting about what I just shared. At the cadet program, we're batting 1,000 with our kids going, articulating through this system to wear the blue uniform, becoming police officers. And these are kids from the community.
Right.
So of course, I know you was at my recent retirement. And one of the kids that articulated through that system was named Brian Ford.
I remember him.
And I was almost in tears and watching Brian speak to his relationships with me. And of course, Brian now is a deputy and with the Riverside Sheriff Department. And of course, Brian can then afford to pay for lunch now. So, so of course, he's still a part of the cadre of folks that I mentor and coach. But it started off when he was like real young. Yeah. Right. So of course, within our system, there's always opportunities to touch our youths. Or like you said, within the policy and the resources given, are we utilizing it the right way to be able to touch them?
Right. Yeah. I know you're a man of faith, and I know that guides everything that you do. But why is mentoring young people so important to you? I could tell it's like your passion. You talked about creating these programs. You talked about how you turned around this, the narrative perception of San Bernardino Unified School District. You talk about the cadet programs. You talk about how you lead your officers. Why is mentoring young people so important to you?
Yes. So, you know, they say that when you look in the mirror, you long for that that you never had. So, of course, when I got into A-Suite and was able to lend my voice and to be able to give youths the resources and my voice, it's the thing that I never got. You know, even though I was in the home with my dad, a lot of what I'm experiencing today, he didn't understand. You know, all the degrees, all the accomplishments. However, I think it comes from this place of want where through them, I'm getting it. So I deliver it, right? It's like they look in the mirror. So when somebody like Mr. Ford succeeds, it's like I succeeded a lot earlier. I didn't have to take that road or that lane as long as I have. So I create a shortcut for them, right? I create this fast track of information for them, and I put them in an environment to be successful.
So leadership is not for the faint of heart, right? And you talked about, thank you for sharing that. You talked about you are modeling what you didn't receive, right? And can you speak a little bit more about that?
Oh, yeah. When you grow up in an environment where it's rough and tumble, and it's no structure, no discipline. The principles are not there, and the value system moves. When you grow up in that environment, you find it. And of course, I initially found it serving in the military. A little under 10 years serving in the military, and of course, it's a disciplined environment. You have to wear your uniform, press it, wake up early, keep your body fit. So it's like these things that I found that I believe has changed the way I see my experience with living. And of course, I'll share this personal story for me. When I served in the military, I deployed to a place called Pongo Pongo. I'm on Pongo 2 days and I'm seriously injured to the verge of death. In a way, doctor saves me. And I made a commitment that I'll live what Desmond says. I'll treat people the right way. I won't lie, steal, or cheat. So, of course, I live my life every day by those principles. Of course, it comes from what Gandhi says. You could tell what a man lives and breathes by the way he lives. And you alluded to that in terms of my fate. My fate means everything to me, man, because by the grace of God, you see a man like me sitting here, because I could have been gone in Pongo. However, he saved me to be able to be a voice for the voiceless. So I do my best and to be courageous enough when I'm in a room to speak the things that's not right and to speak the things that's right. Lift those that's doing the right things and stand in front of those that's not courageous enough to be able to stand.
Thank you for sharing that. Well, we're glad you're still here.
Oh, yeah. And me too.
I think one of the things that people fail to understand is leadership is, and I alluded to this, is not for the faint of heart, but leadership is often born out of adversity, tragedies, overcoming, you know, challenges, you know, dealing with things maybe that you didn't have, but you want to make sure that you instill in other people. When we're talking about, you know, the schools and the cadets and the people that you are leading, especially within the schools, I just want to talk a little bit about how do you coach behavior that's indicative of what it should be, whether it's the kids, whether it's the, you know, the individuals that you're mentoring. You have high standards. First of all, you have high standards for yourself. I think you do that before you put high standards on someone else. And so you lead by example. So how do you help individuals overcome some of those challenges when the behavior is indicative of the leadership styles or the leadership that you're trying to impart into them that you know that they already have?
I love this question because, you know, oftentimes in the rooms that you're in, especially when you're in A-suite, it's behaviors in those rooms that sometimes are intolerable. However, it starts off with making sure that you don't participate in that type of behavior. And I believe that's the first line in terms of people keeping people accountable. Mm-hmm. Prime example, men don't use profanity. I don't use profanity. Mm-hmm. So when I'm around folks, and I'll say something like this, I don't know that there's any need for that language. Mm-hmm. All right. And at least I know that my principal came forward. Mm-hmm. And this is what's interesting. As they're around you more and more, and they're like, well, I'm around Joe Polino, so I'm gonna make sure that I'm mindful of my language around them, because I've already set those parameters.
Right.
I don't see any need for that around me. So of course, it starts off by being patient. You don't take the behavior personal, right? You know, as that said in a good book, you find a person where they stand.
Right.
Yeah. However, you do your best to make sure that you lead them the right way, where whatever their behavior is, that you don't reciprocate it, right? And then you're courageous enough to be able to give them some guidance on what you believe would be a better way of behaving, right? Just like, I remember in school, they had kids going into the store, taking stuff. However, I made sure that they can't say Joe Polino did it. So we're grown men today, 60 plus, and they're like, "Yeah, that guy right there, he didn't behave the way we behave."
Right.
So of course, and what's interesting is how today they're like, "Man, you was a good example for us." And of course, at that time, you don't know. And it's the same thing with adults, right? When we're in the room, and we have to be competent and courageous enough to be able to say, that's not right.
Yes.
And when we do it, we have to be okay standing where the 98% will stand and say, well, you're different.
Right.
And we have to be okay being different.
Right.
And so I always find myself being on the opposite end. You know, when you at my retirement say, I'm as good to be in the room with the 3% that's here. So we'll always have a 3% around us, and we have to be okay with that, where the mass may be annoyed with the way we are.
Well, that leads me right into my next question. So thank you. But before I forget, let me thank you for your service, service that you, the service in the military, the service that you've done as chief of police. You know, I'm a firm believer that the work you have done today, previously, is building. The work you did previously is building a better today and tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
So thank you
likewise
for that.
Thank you.
You said something though that I just kind of want to touch on. You said in the room with the 3%.
Right.
And oftentimes leadership is lonely.
So true.
And so oftentimes people in this world of social media and, you know, followers and likes and everything like that, you know, true leadership is absolutely lonely. How do one, you overcome that? And two, how do you teach others that it's okay to be the 3%?
Oh, I think it's a simple equation. You know, Miles Monroe says that it's no more powerful encounter than encountering yourself.
Right.
So if you know who you are, then you want those around you. That's what you are.
Right.
And also in the journey, it's going to be those that fall off. Right. Mm-hmm. We have to be okay with the change that happens around us. Right. Especially when you start understanding and learning. Those that refuse to learn won't come along with you.
Right.
So it's important that we are intentional about the people that's in our midst.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's that saying that not everybody should be allowed to be within our intercentral.
Right.
Right?
Absolutely.
And of course, it's an analogy for our being.
Right.
They shouldn't speak in your ear if they're not speaking the right things.
Absolutely.
Right? And of course, they're saying that one ingests a poison that they take in. Mm-hmm. So we're responsible for bad people being around us.
Absolutely.
If they're bad, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so it's important we're intentional that now we have good people around us, right? That will guard us and tell us the truth.
Yes.
Right? Those are the type of folks that I like around me, the 2% is like, hey, Joe, you shouldn't have wore that.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah, I agree 100%. Too, you know, one thing that you said, knowledge is power, you know, and the, you know, my owner's manual says, without it, people perish.
Right.
And so that's number one. And then number two, I love the fact what Joel Osteen said. Joel Osteen said that you don't need a room full of folks.
Right.
You need one or two good friends that's going to tell you the truth, that's going to speak to you in truth and in love.
Right.
Right. Maintain the positivity, but tell you the truth.
Yes.
Yeah. And we'll have your back no matter what. So I think, you know, the perception is that it's lonely, but the reality is the more people you have, somebody made a song about it, more people, more problems.
Right.
And so we'll be right back and talking to Joe Pulino. I know he's accomplished so much. We're going to delve into what he's going to be doing next.
Right on. You know, something I should have mentioned in terms of people around you. You know, in reading Maxwell's work, Maxwell says, if you're lonely, it's because you traveled alone.
Mm. That's fine.
Yeah, how is it that you apex and you're the only one at the apex, even though at the apex there's only rooms oftentimes for one, mm-hmm. but you can have somebody at the next thread, right? Just like JG, I worked with him, John, in LA. And John's been one of those that's been in my corral that I've mentored.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when we was traveling on the Underground Railroad, I said, JG, if you listen to what I tell you, you'll be a chief in no time.
Mm-hmm.
So within 5 years, when he came to work for me in San Bernardino, he went to Cal State at the lieutenant. 2 years later, he's a chief. And now he's doubling back to replace me.
Wow.
Isn't that powerful?
That's powerful. Boy,
yeah.
David, did you catch that?
I did.
Yeah. Oh, you're still rolling that.
That's good.
So of course, it's a good thing to see others succeed off your voice. And it's that saying, right? It's like this counterweight that lifts. If I'm lifted, then so are you.
Right.
It counters. Right. So we have to be okay with lifting people because then we too are lifted.
Absolutely.
Right? I wouldn't be in here if I didn't know you. Right?
Yeah.
I wouldn't be here if I didn't know you. Yeah. And of course, I was sharing with John on my ride in.
Yeah.
I think this is like the third time this sister's going to interview me because, of course, in I was on the panel, right? Mm-hmm. And of course, subsequent online, I think twice.
Mm-hmm.
So what a blessing to have your voice called, right?
Thank you. I will keep calling. So welcome back. We're going to continue this powerful conversation with Joe Pulino. He is talking about how he is leading with grace, grit, and greatness as he navigated as being the police chief for the San Bernardino Unified School District. So he's retired, as I indicated earlier, and have left a shoes. I don't know who's going to fill those shoes, but, you know, they are, you know, huge shoes to be able to fill to continue the vision, the mission, and the leadership style that you left. It's going to be a void, but I'm sure God has somebody in place that will be able to carry that mantle to the next leader. So what's next for you, Chief Pulino? I mean, you will always be Chief Pulino to me until you get another title.
Thank you.
And then it'll be, okay, Chief Pulino and, so what's the and coming down the pipeline?
Well, yeah, there's a lot that I guess right now I'm saying no to two job offers a week. You know, so of course, mine is to take some space and be able to rediscover Joe Pulino. Okay. Yeah. However, I believe something that I need to share is that, I have decided to run for political office.
Is that right?
Yes, yes.
And which office might that be?
Yeah, so, you know, of course, I live in the 4th District, you know, within the city of Colton.
Okay.
So, yeah, in November, you know, I'll be on the ballot for the council member for the 4th District of the city of Colton.
Yeah. Well, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Thank
I you. Have no doubt that you will win with flying colors. So, what made you decide that you wanted to run for city council?
Well, you know, sometimes they said, be careful who you hang around with.
Okay. Well, I better be real careful then.
Yeah. Be careful who you hang around with because you become like them. So, of course, a lot of my friends are politicians and they're, hey, Joanne, this would be a great pivot for you. Mm-hmm. And it would continue your service to our community as well. Yeah. And of course, and what they say, if you're not in the room, you're on the menu.
Yeah, I remember somebody saying that. If you don't have a seat at the table, you're on the menu.
Yeah, so of course, and mine is to make sure that our community is represented properly. So right. Of course, I'm putting my name in the hat and run for the 4th District, the city of Colton.
Well, congratulations. I know that you will win with flying colors.
Thank you.
With all of your leadership from, you know, the FBI, National Academy, from the military, for chief of police and turning around that particular school district. I know you're doing some post-executive coursework. Now city council. So, you know, hopefully one day we'll see you in that beautiful White House that's in D.C. You know, I like to speak those things as if they were.
Oh, definitely.
So tell me, and oftentimes, you know, people here retired, they think, okay, that's it. You know, I'm going to go, you know, sit on the beach somewhere and eat bonbons. But retirement means, okay, that assignment was done. Now it's time for my next assignment. Tell me, what is it exactly that you're looking to accomplish in this trajectory of your career path by being city council member?
Yeah, I think I'm also, it creates what is your legacy going to be. So, of course, in my retirement, it's good to see my grandson in the room, young Joe Polino III. Yeah, however, he's clear on this family's legacy. We have a responsibility to make sure that we're giving back. You know, we have a responsibility to make sure that we're not shaming the family. Yeah. So of course, and I can't sit still. And you know, a fella told me 2 days ago, I noticed that grass doesn't grow under your feet.
Right.
I think it's important that we keep our energy. And of course that saying, right, that comes from urban America, till the wheels fall off.
Right.
Yeah, so we should do work while we're here. Mm-hmm. And that changes humanity, changes people, changes the community. So y'all believe it's in that spirit that I'm running. I've accomplished a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. However, I'm not done. Retirement is like this cliche. However, it's only so much golfing you can do.
Right.
It's only so much golfing you can do. However, I think there's some areas that I can help the community see things differently as well.
I love that song, and I don't know who it's by, but they say he's not done with me yet.
Right.
This is not, your retirement wasn't the end of your story. He's not done with you yet. Right. He has so much more in store. What are the core things, if you had to say, there are three things that I would like to accomplish as city council, what would those three things be?
I think, solidify the conversation on public safety. I think, what are we doing to engage our youths, right? Which, like you said, is a passion of mine. And of course, I'm just being a community, mm-hmm. right? It's often tragic to me where you walk out your house and your neighbor doesn't engage with you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so as a council person, I would probably, make sure that you greet your neighbor, right? Of course, I would show how that can be done. Mm-hmm. And we're a long way from, those scenes in the movies where people show up with pies.
Right.
Yeah, however we can show up with a smile and a thank you.
Right.
It's good to meet your neighbor. My name is Joe Polino. Right. Don't be afraid to ask for milk or sugar. If you're ever in distress, I'm here to help you.
Right.
Prime example of this, where I live, it's like a rise. So it's a young man that just bought a home above me. And of course, I have all kinds of trees in my yard. Mm-hmm. And so he knocked on my door and my wife, Elsie, says, our neighbor is at the door. So, of course, I go out and my neighbor, his name is Danny. And I said, how can I help you, sir? And he's like, on Abraham, your shrubs, the leaves are falling into my pool. So, of course, I said, well, what do we need to do to correct that? So, of course, I had the gardener trim it down to make sure that I show him that I'm being neighborly and that we don't have to
fight
or hassle, that we can have a conversation that's, like you said, is peaceful, humanity bound. And of course, now I know that Danny will vote for me. I got at least one vote.
You got one vote. I'm quite sure you got more than one vote.
I work very public safety, MRUs, and making sure that we're a community.
And I think that's important when we talk about community. You know, I grew up in Texas. And so that's one thing that I think that we're lacking in communities across California, period. I mean, I've lived both in Northern California and Southern California. And so, like, I know all of my neighbors, you know, they know me, they know my children, they know my grandchildren, like, they even know my dog's name.
Right.
But I think that that is so much that's lost in the community because, you know, we're living in this microwave society where people just don't have time to interact with people. And it's by choice.
Right.
And so much is lost in so much is lost with that real connection of just trying to be kind, right? You know, there's a difference between being nice and being kind. You know, the Bible talks about being kind. Jesus ain't say nothing about being nice. And so just kindness, you know, and leading by example and treating people the way you want to be treated. And so, you know, I think it's, you know, an awesome, I mean, I'm so happy for you. The next step is, running for city council. Now, how does Miss Elsie feel about that?
Well, yeah, and it said that, you know, you found a great partner when they find joy in the things that you're doing. And of course, I've always done my best to make sure that the things I'm doing doesn't harm our time together, our space within our home, especially with my favorite daughter. Making sure that you know, that she continue to be spoiled. Right. Now my sons are different.
Right.
They're like, however, she's always rooting me on. And I think 100% of my success is her support of my endeavors, right? And when I share with Elsie, I'm going to the police academy. She's like, God bless you.
Have fun.
Right. It's the same when, you know, I decided to jump out of helicopters. Yeah, I'm in the military or all the crazy stuff I've done.
Right.
And that is, when I look back, it's like, man, what a powerful struggle. It has allowed me to be able to stand tempered, right? Because it's heat that tempers us, like you said, in the struggles where we find ourselves. And then it reveals to us what we can withstand and not withstand. So, yeah, she supports me.
Of course, I knew that. So really, really quickly, I do want listeners to be able to know how to contact you, right? And, you know, especially individuals that are living in your particular community. The election is when?
It's in November.
It's in November.
2026.
So your name's already on that ballot. So whether you mail in or you go to the polls, tell the people how they can find you.
Well, yeah, definitely. Of course, you can always call me. Yeah, I answer my phone. Area code 909-240-3328. And of course, if I don't answer right away, just text me and you'll have probably within a half an hour the voice of Joe Polino.
So, ladies and gentlemen, I hope that you thoroughly have enjoyed this show that I have, you know, Chief Polino, City Council Member Polino. I'm going to just go ahead and change that now because it says speak those things as if they were. Thank you for taking the time to come and spend time with us. Thank you for all the work that you've done. Thank you for the sacrifices that you've done. Thank you for the knowledge, the wisdom that you've instilled into our children. Thank you for creating a legacy, not just for yourself, but for your children, our children, and our children's children's children. But before I know I'm closing, before I do, I have one last thing I want to ask you. Oftentimes when we talk about legacy, mm-hmm. you know, we always know the day we were born. We don't know what that last digit is going to be,
right.
but that dash in between is where that impact. Tell me what you want that dash to be a reflection of.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I mean, it goes back to my quote from Desmond, where Desmond says, my humanity is mine and yours, so we can only be humane together. And of course, and when they look at that dash, when it comes to Joe Pulido, I'm like, this is one solid human being.
Well, you heard it here. And let me just say, he is one solid human being.
Thank you.
We'll see you next time.
Yeah, thank you. Well done.
Thank you.